Boker Tov, world. Today's daf in Masechet Ketuvot, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Nun Zayin, and we're holding at the very last line, Nun Vav, Omud Beit. So what we learned yesterday was this amazing Chiddush in Rebbe Meir, according to which, even if a Tanai is not going to manage to do anything to the Ksuva, and it's just going to be thrown out of court, the very fact that you made it is enough to destroy your ketuvah in terms of the marriage. And be'ilato would be be'ilat znut because of the psychological element of the ketuvah, in which it isn't just the fact of her being protected, it's the fact that she feels secure with the ketuvah. And if she is not a lawyer and she doesn't know it's going to be thrown out of court, so then we've got a problem, because she thinks that the tanai that you made was actually a way of being mavata the ksuva, even though we're going to throw it out. That was a fantastic new approach, and it has very important implications for this story today. And this, by the way, is something that often happened, actually happened to me. And this Gemara turns out to be definitive in how it is that you deal with it. So what happened over here is that Achte the Rami Bar Choma Havanasiva L'Rav Avia, the sister of Rami Bar Choma was married to Rav Avia, and she lost her ketuvah, Irchas Ketuvata, and Otul Kamed Rav Yosef. So they went to Rav Yosef, says, what do we do? We lost the ketuvah. Omar Lohu, Ochi Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel. Look, what's the problem exactly? It was only Rabbi Meir who said that if you try to reduce the ksuva to a less than 200 to a betula, less than 100 to an hamona, even though the tanai isn't kal, that was our beautiful dia, kol apochet, doesn't mean that she gets less. It means that you attempted to write less. Then it turns out that bilato bilat znut, even though the ketuvah is a perfectly valid ketuvah in the end. And I guess that's what you're worried about. Why is that what you're worried about? Because look, whether or not this woman has a ketuvah is really completely irrelevant to us, because the bottom line is the shtar in Bezdin, that virtual shtar, the din of a tnai Bezdin, is going to be the basis of any collection if Lamaisa her ksiva was lost. So then there's no problem, because she's still going to be able to collect because of the tnai Bezdin. It's like Rabbi Meir said, if she gets the ksiva, she still gets the ksiva. So is that really a problem? But there is a problem in her mind. In her mind, oh my God, I lost my ketuvah. What am I going to do? How am I going to get my ketuvah? And because of that, you're worried, because she doesn't realize she has a ketuvah. Now, as Rashi points out, that doesn't mean that every woman needs a ketuvah. There are places where nobody has a ketuvah, and everybody relies on the virtual shtar and bezdin, which is what we do in terms of the details of the ketuvah. The ketuvah that we have is sort of like a little preamble to all of the big tnaim of the ketuvah that aren't even mentioned. And there it's okay, because over there, since everybody does it, so she doesn't feel any way different than anyone else. She's not nervous. She knows this is the way it's handled. But in her case, which is like today, where everybody's getting a ketuvah, and she lost her ketuvah, oh my God, she thinks she's not going to be able to collect. But that's only Rabbi Meir Shita, remember? That's Divrei Rabbi Meir. Avol Chachamim Omrim, Mashe Adam Et Ishto Shtayim V'Shalosh Shanim B'Lo Ketuvah. It's a big deal. You know, you don't really need the ketuvah. So it's a minute to write the ketuvah. Okay, and if she lost the ketuvah, so the first thing you got to do before you're allowed to be with your wife is to go write a new ketuvah. It's crazy. Wait a year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever. It's a nice thing to have a ketuvah. That's all the reason. It's like a minute, you know? So don't worry about it. So she lost the ketuvah. Big deal. Omale Abaye, but hold on a second over here. What do you mean it's a nice thing? The din is, as a klal in halacha, that we paskin like Rabbi Meir when he is making a gezeira. And remember, all of this, he's being machmer very much. He's adding psychological components to the ketuvah that is mentioned in the Torah, which he has. And that's called one of his gzerotav. And we paskin like that. When Rabbi Meir tells us over one of these things, we have to be chayish for it. So what do you mean, don't bother writing a ktuva. Gavi, this is called ktuva di irchasa, and it's a terminology based here on the irchas ktuvata, but the ktuva that is written in its place is written with a different language because it has to refer to something that was. And therefore, it's a special shtar, which is called the ktuva di irchasa. This is something that happens quite often. A woman can't remember where she put her ksuva. Years, she's still looking for ksuva. Apparently, she's lost her ksuva the way she's lost everything else. And like the Yerushalmi points out, what do you think happened to all of that jewelry? I don't know. It's all gone. But the point is that at this, that that moment, so then you're mechuyev to write a ksuva di irchasa. I don't know if there's anybody here that was, I think Barnea was present, but I had to write a ksuva di irchasa, which I wrote on the back of a napkin. But we ended up writing a ksuva di irchasa, and, you know, my wife doesn't want to put the napkin up on the wall or whatever, but but it works. All right. So this is therefore the chiyuv. And therefore, Rabbi Yosef says, okay, I give up. I mean, if that's the case, then, you know, you're really right. If we paskin like the Gezeres, then that would mean that this chiddush of Rabbi Meir about the psychological component of security in terms of the shoktu is mechayev you to immediately write a ktuva di irchasa. So zil ktovla, you better get out there and do it, because otherwise, you know, you're not going to be able to be with your wife. That's considered to be a biasnuz. Okay, now getting back to the machlokes, turns out that we had really three different approaches, remember, to the overall question of the reduction of the ksuva. So we had Rabbi Meir who says, you cannot effectively reduce a ksuva. Doesn't matter. Even if you make it a formal document and she writes that I already received the money, and that would be the way that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you could, as Rabbi Yehuda said in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi, he had claimed that you actually could make an oral declaration. You don't have to make it look like it passed through lawyers and so on. It's enough if it boils down to like a t'nai in the ktuva that would end up lowering your ultimate costs. So that could also be a way to effectively reduce your ksuva. That was an interesting machlokas between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. Do you accept her mechila that she would make orally, or do we have to make it look very official so that the original ksuva doesn't look like it was in any way reduced, and it really looks like there was this official payment, it's all stamped, she's got a contract, a receipt, and so on. So Kiyosa Rav Dimi comes from Eretz Yisrael, and he said that you should know that Rav Shimon ben Pazi quoted Rav Yoshua ben Levi, who was quoting Bar Kappara, about how to understand the Machlokas Tanoim between Rav Yossi and Rav Yehuda that we found in the Braita. Where is that machloket? That machloket is only in the beginning. Now, we don't know exactly what the beginning means, but the basic, we're going to see in the Gemara, there may be different approaches. What do you mean by the beginning? But the bottom line is that there's clearly a difference before the woman was already zoche in her ktuva, and she's now, you know, thinking about what she needs really in order to be able to, you know, feel comfortable with the marriage. That's the bitchila. But once she was already zocha in that ktuva, and now you're like discussing whether she's going to agree to accept less. An informal agreement to accept less is very not persuasive, because why should she? You know, okay, so she just wants to be nice, to just want to get into a fight about the issue. But, you know, deep down she figures, listen, if this guy divorces me, I'm going to go after him for all his worth, and oh, good thing. It's all very nice that she's pretending to be nice, but you can't believe a thing when a woman pretends to be nice. So in that case, that's called the end. Now, whatever the end is, whatever the beginning is, we're going to discuss, because there's obviously a long process that's involved over here, because we have prior to the chuppah, that would be the moment that they're ready to come into the chuppah. That's called the tchila of the chuppah. And then we have the conclusion of the chuppah. Everybody's happy now. He's taking her home. But it's still prior to consummation. That's like the middle. And then we've got the closing of the drama in which they've already consummated the marriage. And now she's feeling Okay, now I got my ksuva. Now there's no question. Everything is legal and so on. Then he says, listen, honey, dear, maybe you'd like to be mochelet some of your ksuva. You know, I mean, I'm like in a tough spot. At that point, it's obviously less reasonable to accept an informal mechila, right? So it's not clear which one of those stages is called beginning and which one is called end, but the general idea is clear. So what he said, what Bar Kappara was quoted as saying, is that the whole machlokas between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda about whether it's possible to reduce a ketuvah with anything less than an actual shtar in which kotevla and so on, which is what Rabbi Yehuda holds, that whole machlokas where Rabbi Yossi was willing to accept less than that, that was only in the beginning. That's where they're arguing. But in the end, nobody holds that we can rely on just an oral statement. And Rabbi Yossi would never have said that she can just say, I already received some. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan says that actually that's not true, that they are arguing in both cases, in the beginning and in the end. Now, again, because we don't know what beginning is, we don't know what end is, it's not clear, really, that there's any big machlokas over here between the way Rabbi Yochanan was learning it and between the way that we're trying to explain it now with Shimon ben Pazi, right? Rabbi Yeshua. So, okay. Now, the thing is that in order to get clear what we mean by beginning and what we mean in end, it turns out that Rabbi Abohu says Rabbi Yochanan himself, you can discuss it theoretically all you want, but Rabbi Yochanan, who is the person we're discussing over here, Rabbi Yochanan said to me, Beferish, that listen, I want you to know that actually me and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, we're not arguing on each other. We're simply using the words Tchila v'Sof differently. But we all understand the machlokas between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, we all understand it the same way. So when I said the Tchila and Sof, and when he, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, said Tchila v'Sof, we weren't referring to the same things. And therefore, it could very well be that we're all on the same page, okay? When Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said B'Tchila, that's where we're arguing, meaning that's where Rabbi Yossi is willing to accept less than a formal contract of a receipt. What he meant was Tchilat Chuppah. The very beginning is what he meant. That's when we're coming into the Chuppah. The Chuppah isn't over yet. And there's not yet that security of Chuppah. So at that point, there and only there, that's where Rabbi Yossi was arguing. And that's why he was saying that in that case, she still doesn't feel that the deal is ended. And she's still discussing the deal. And she's still willing to settle for a marriage in which she's less protected. And when he said sof, okay, he meant sof, meaning the end of everything. So when Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says everybody agrees that for sure you cannot make any type of oral understanding, even Rabbi Yossi agrees to that at the end, he means at the end, meaning where it's already consummated. Therefore, we don't really believe her. So that means that when we're talking about the machlokas being in the beginning, he means from the knisa l'chuppah, before the chuppah is over, until the end of chuppah, but which is the tchilas bia, but not the third level. So we've got three levels over here. We have the tchilas chuppah, the sof chuppah, which is the equivalent of tchilas bia, and then we have sof bia. So basically what he was saying is that you have a machlokas in, let's call it 1, 2, and 3. So you have a machlokas in the first and second, and that's where they're arguing. But in the third, which is after consummation, everybody agrees. That's what he was saying. I agree with him 100%. I wasn't arguing about that. I was using the words differently. When I said that they're chaylik in both cases, bein bezu u bein bezu, I meant that they are cholik, bein bezu, either in the tchilas chuppah or the sof chuppah. The sof chuppah is still only the tchilas bia, which is what he was saying. He was saying they're arguing in 1 and 2 and agreeing in 3, and I was saying they're arguing in 1 and 2 and agreeing in 3. And when I said bein bazu, I meant either in one or two. And when he was talking about one versus three, that was something I would agree in two. He just didn't bother mentioning two. When Ravin came, he said that Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi quotes Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Mishum Bar Kapora as saying it differently, that Dafka the Machlokas is Besof. That's where Rabbi Yehuda insists that we will not accept any oral declarations. It's got to be official. It has to be written up. But even Rabbi Yehuda would be made that she could be Mochelet, B'tchilat. Ava B'tchilat, Divrei HaKol Mochelet, including even Rabbi Yehuda. And it's Rabbi Yochanan who says, not true, in both cases, meaning either in the beginning or in the end, there's still a Machlokas, and Rabbi Yehuda would argue. And in this version, Rabbi Abba also said, look, I personally heard Rabbi Yochanan. He explained to me, so there's no point in discussing this, that I and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi do not disagree. We're using the words differently. And when Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi spoke about the sof, he meant the sof of the tchi, of the actual chuppah is what he meant, not the sof, meaning after they consummate their marriage. And when he said in the tchila, he meant in the tchila of chuppah. So basically what Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is saying is that everybody is meida, that you can make a t'nai just verbally only during the first part, meaning as you come into the chuppah. Once the chuppah is over, then forget it. Then Rabbi Yehuda is going to argue, and he's going to hold, no, you need the whole thing to be judicially approved, and so on. It has to look official. Otherwise, it looks like you're being mamayat, you're star d'ksuv, right? And we're not going to accept any kinds of bechilas. And in this version, what I said, says Rabbi Yochanan, I said, in either event, you have a machlokas. What I meant in either event was the tchilas bia, the sof bia, meaning sections 2 and 3, which Lamaisa Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi agreed to also. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was saying, in 2 and 3, there's a machlokas. They're only, Rabbi Yehuda would only agree in one. Well, that's what I was saying. We're just referring to different periods. When I say either, I meant that what we're talking about is the beginning of Bia and the Sof Bia. That's when I said that the Machlokas, which is true, because that's really anything but walking into the Chuppah. And he said the same thing. If you're just walking into the Chuppah, she can still be Mochelet. So now we have a very interesting point over here, fascinating, which gives us insight into how it is that we view a Gemara all the time. And it's interesting, Rav Barnea will remember that this was something that my grandfather, Zatzal, Rav Shiva, Rav Ruderman, he used to say all the time, and it was always a big issue between me and him, where it would frustrate me no end. And Lamaisa, he was absolutely right based on this Gemara and the way Rashi describes this Gemara, which is almost word for word how he would justify his behavior. So what he used to do was he would always stop the Talmidim in the middle. That's why everybody would run when they saw him anywhere near, so that he wouldn't accost them on the way. It was amazing. You'd see people veering off in all directions if he's coming down the street. But anyway, if he gets you, so then he immediately asks you questions on what you're learning, right? So he wants to hear what you have to say. Okay. He almost invariably, unless you're a total idiot, he almost, in which case he would tell you you're a total idiot. But if you said something, Gabi actually learned such incredible respect because of the immense disgust that the Rashiva described for him in making him feel like a total idiot when he was only 12 years old and just come to the yeshiva. And then when he explained to him that the Rashiva, he misunderstood and was talking about two different things. And, oh, that's wonderful. And he learned that he can really respect what he's being told. If he's an idiot, he's being told he's an idiot. Fine. I remember one time there was a guy called Gornish in the yeshiva. And he asked him a kasha, and Gornish did not give a good answer. Oi, says he to him, du bist a zag Gornish. You're a zero. That's a garnisher. Anyway, so if the person would say an answer, it was almost all the time that he would say, good, good, sehr gut. And usually it was very stupid. And this would drive me crazy. How are you telling somebody that that is good when it's against the whole sugya? And he would always say, it's true, it is not good locally, but it is good somewhere. The thought is a good thought, the svara is a good svara, but it does not apply here. You're right. But I can't tell the guy what his thinking is off. His thinking isn't off. His perspective is off. So his svara is a good svara. Good, good. Now, this Gemara actually comes along to teach us this approach, which is remarkable. So Rav Papa says this weird statement over here. Rav Papa says, look, I could tell you if it wouldn't be that Rabbi Abohu had actually given a face-to-face from Rabbi Yochanan description of the machlokas, right? So I can't argue on that. I mean, if Rabbi Yochanan himself wants to say that I and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi basically are agreeing and we're just using different language, you know, so then fine, that's the reality. So he loved the Omer Rabbi Abu, Mifrashali Minei the Rabbi Yochanan. I heard it directly from him. The Anav Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. We're not arguing on each other. I personally would not have understood the sugya that way. I would have said that actually Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi are arguing. But it was Rav Dimi and Ravin, they are the ones who are not arguing. In other words, just because Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan, they come along, I would never have tried to say that they are not arguing. Why wouldn't they be arguing if instead I have to say that Rav Dimi and Ravin, they're arguing about what? About what Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi actually and what Rabbi Yochanan was saying. I would have said myself that Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi are arguing, and not that Rav Dimi and Ravin are arguing about what Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said. That's what I would have said. So I would have said Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi are pligi. Rav Dimi and Ravin, they are the ones who are actually not pligi in quoting what it was Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said. Because I would have said that the word sof that Ravin was talking about when he quoted Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and he said that the machlokas between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda is the sof, he meant the sof of the chuppah. And when Rabbi Dimi said that according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, the machlokas is only bitchila, he meant the bitchila of bia. And that would mean there's referring to the same thing, because the sof of the chuppah is the tchila of bia. Point of time number two that we said. Now that Rabbi Abu said he heard directly from Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan himself said he's not arguing. I mean, I can't say that anymore. We have to agree that it was Rav Dimi and Ravin who were arguing in what it was that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said. And it's thinking about, who the heck cares what you would have said? This, you're wasting our time. What do you mean, if not for the fact? But it is the fact. But I mean, you know, if your grandmother had wheels, she'd be a trolley car. Thank you very much. Why are we wasting our time discussing the root of your grandmother's trolley? So what's the point? Micah Mashmalan says the Gemara, no, Rav Papa is coming to teach us how to think about things. Because Mashmalan, in the event that you have a situation like this, okay, situation like this, there's two ways of interpreting what's going on. Either each one of us is utilizing their svara to explain what is meant by the Tanai and how it would work and what the difference would be in Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, right? Okay, that's a valid machlokas, because each one of us has grounds for what it is that we're saying. We may be wrong locally, but the grounds make sense. And in that sense, says Rashi, when you're talking about something that makes sense, then essentially what you're talking about is Elu ve'elu divrei Elohim chayim. I mean, even if we don't literally say that in this particular case, but as Rashi says, and here's his words, Zimnin de Shayach Haitaima, Vizimnin de Shayach Haitaima, Shahata'am mitapech lefishinui advarim bishinui muat. Lovely words. Sometimes logic A is appropriate, and sometimes logic B is appropriate, because there are so many unaccounted for factors that need to be accounted for that you cannot just dismiss it and say, no, this is wrong. It's wrong locally, but that's a perspective and a context. Things change drastically with some tiny change in the overall structure of the problem. B'shinui mu'at, beautifully stated. Therefore, I'd much prefer to say that they're arguing about something in which both of them could be right. Not really right, but right the way the Rosh Hashiva Zatzal used the word right. Good, good. I'd rather be able to say good, good, than to say that we're arguing about the facts. Because the way you're doing it is somebody is just totally off the wall. He got his facts wrong. He was saying, this is what they're arguing about. And you're saying, no, this is what they said. Either he said this or he said that. I mean, if you can't tell me he said something he didn't say, that's just wrong. We would much prefer to understand that when there's a machlokas, it's not that somebody is just wrong. It's that what he says may not be applicable in this case. And therefore, kamash malan, that it's better, the pligi treyarim amoroi, a taima de nafshayu, it makes much more sense for people to be arguing about their own insights, which may or not be true locally, than to say that two amoroyim are arguing about what somebody else said. That the pligi aliba de chadamora, because then somebody is simply, so to speak, lying. In other words, they are misrepresenting reality. We don't want to misrepresent reality. We want to point out the elasticity of reality in terms of sfara, which is a completely different issue. Okay, I guess I'm not going to get any l'chaims this morning. All of my people are just sitting around there folding laundry, folding socks, looking into the TV. Ah! Akiva is finally active. Okay. Look, I am.
Folding laundry is the best escort a Rav can have. Who copays?
Very good. Okay, getting back now to a completely new idea, which we've mentioned earlier. The completely new idea is the question of how much time do you have to prepare for a wedding? Now, remember that we had the idea of moredet before, and we said a moredet, these were one of the 14 things that made a difference where the Tosefet of the Ketuvah was like the Ketuvah, in that the moredet who refuses to go to bed with her husband, she's going to get a reduction of her Ketuvah until she finally gives in. That there is an equivalent halacha, as we'll see later on a male who's mored and refuses to perform. Then he's agreed to get married, and he's not getting married. He ends up having to add to the ketuvah, as we'll see later on. But right now, in terms of that moreda, so how much time does a woman have before something looks weird and she's refusing to go to the marriage?
Let's ask Richie.
Oh. You're right. We have to ask Richie. No, this was just introductory words. I didn't say one word of that Mishnah. No, chas v'sholom, I would never jilt my kapitan. Go for it. And so the Mishnah comes to address exactly this question. Notnim lebetulah shneimasar chodesh mishi tva'ah ha'ba'al. So from the moment that the Orus says to her, okay, baby, time to get ready for that wedding. Well, she's got 12 months to prepare for the weddings. Take a long time to prepare. She's got to find the wedding dress. That takes 6 months. Then she's got to get the jewelry. That takes another 2 months. Then she's got to select the hairdo. That takes another month. Then she's got to get the photographer. God help us. I mean, okay. So she needs at least 12 months to prepare for a wedding. And therefore, she's given that time to finance it. That's mad. She's got to take care of herself. He's the guy in those days. He was the one that had to arrange the actual wedding, the caterer, and so on and so forth. And that also, he takes him 12 months to take care of himself. On the other hand, an alma now was already married once. She's probably got her wedding gown in a chest somewhere, you know. So she doesn't have to go running around for a new one. She's got enough jewelry from her first marriage. And she doesn't need that amount of time. And anyway, it's not like so overwhelming to her. You know, I've been through this before. You know, it's all temporary. So la'almanah shloshim yom. So she needs 30 days. 30 days is plenty of time. Higi hazman v'lo nisu. When the time has arrived, and runaway bride, what happens then? Well, that's not the case that we're talking about. We're talking about runaway husband, where that is very common. So, husband does not show up. Okay, so what happens at that point is, ochlot mishalov, ochlot b'truma. So as we saw before, this is the Mishnah Rishayna. Remember that we quoted earlier? First of all, she could sue for support, and he's got to take care of her. Secondly, if he's a Kohen, then even though she's a Bas Yisrael, she starts eating truma, because we're going to now give her the rights to eat truma. Now, obviously, we can't do that just as a response to his being a bad boy and not showing up, right? So unless, as we're going to explain, and we've seen before, really Mikra, then she was always allowed to eat truma, because she is Kinyan Kaspo, and he married her, so to speak, by giving her that ring, by giving her erisin or whatever the erisin is, she was already ru'uya for eating truma. Because whatever the kinyan was is the same thing as kinyan kaspo. So it must be that the fact that Midiraisa was okay, for some reason, now that he doesn't show, we're not going to prevent it. We're going to have to discuss why that would be. I mean, what's the mechanism for that? And now the question is, so what if he wants to support her from Truma? He's a Kohen, and he says, look, honey babes, you know, I'll provide for you all that Truma coming in. But she says, I can't eat Truma. I can only eat Truma when I'm Tahora, you know. You know, you're a man. You don't even think about being Tame, but I have to go through my periods of Tuma, and you're giving me Truma. What the heck am I going to do with Truma? Says he to her, what do you mean, what are you going to do with Truma? Get a WhatsApp group going with women who have truma and they need to sell it, and then and you'll sell it at a discount, you know. So I'll provide you everything truma, and we'll make up for the difference. But I'm not going to sit here selling stuff for you. So what's the din? So Rabbi Tarfon says he could give her all truma and she would have to sell it. Rabbi Akiva says no, he's got to give her food. So basically he could provide her half truma, half no truma, and that way she doesn't have to worry about not having what to eat during Yemei Tumata. Now, the question is, what if her husband died before the 12 months were up and she falls to a Yavam? What happens then? So as we've seen many times, a Yavam does not have the right to be Ma'achil Truma. I mean, if his brother was a Kohen, I would imagine that he's a Kohen as well, right? But nonetheless, as we're going to see, the Torah, Dafka, we have a remez in the Torah that a Yavam doesn't provide for as the equivalent of Kinyan Kaspo. Even though it was his brother's Kinyan, which you'll say now he's taking over, not Lagabe Truma. So let's imagine a case where 6 months had gone by from out of the 12 months. At that point, the husband dies. And now it's been 6 months and the Yavam still has not taken, which is the total of the 12 months. As a matter of fact, even if it was 12 months minus 1 day that she had been waiting for the wedding, the next day was supposed to be the wedding, her Orus drops dead, and now she's waiting for the Yavam. Okay, so now, or even if it would be the other way around. If you kulam bifnei habal, chatzi yom echad, it was only 1 day that she's been waiting, or maybe the opposite, all of them were bifnei Yavam, chatzi yom echad, that had been before the Baal. I mean, why we need that case isn't clear, but we'll ask. In any event, she still can't eat truma at any point. So actually, it wouldn't matter. Even if she had started eating truma, she doesn't continue to eat truma because of the yavam. But all we're talking about is there would never have been a moment that she ate truma. That's all we're saying. So now, all of this that will allow her, forgetting about the yavam, let's get back to the normal case. The guy never showed up to the wedding. Runaway hubby. And now, runway groom, yeah. So this is the Mishnah Rishon, as we saw before, but afterwards we were gozer, ein ha'ishah chelet b'truma, ach tikanes l'chupa. We do not allow her to get truma. Okay, so first of all, where do we get this idea? Is there any basis to requiring 12 months to get ready? Absolutely, says the Gemara. It's a pasuk. Amar Rav Chisda. The Amar Kra. What happens when Eliezer Eved Avram comes and he gives a kiddushin for, on behalf of Yitzchak, he's a shliach, and he gives a kiddushin and he wants to have her come along and get married to Yitzchak. So, what does the family say? The family says she needs time to prepare, you know? So Lavan and the mother, they all say, well, why not let her stay home and get ready? Now, what do you think that means? Yamim, you think that means a couple of days? That's ridiculous. Because if when you say, let her stay 2 days or 10 days, I mean, the way you would say, let her stay for 10 days, or at least 2 days. That would be the way you would say it. You don't start with the lower amount and say, and if you don't like that, why don't we make it more? I mean, who talks like that? That doesn't mean Mishtayin Ishach, who talks like that? First, you say, you're going to say 2 days, and then you're assuming that they're not going to accept that. So you say, okay, so make it 10 days. I mean, I know people like that, but it's certainly not the normal way to speak, right? Elamai Yamim. So the Yamim that they must have been referring to is let her stay the year to prepare herself. We see that the Torah uses the word Yamim as a year because it says that Lagabe the Batayari Chema and so on. So Yamim Tiegulato. Okay, so it means let her stay a year or maybe 10 months. That's what it means. So you see that they would have a right to ask for a year, and that's not crazy. How do you know it means that? Can't Yamim mean a month? And then it would mean, let her stay a month or 10 days. That would make sense. And it does say, Ad Chodesh Yamim. So there's clearly an idea of Yamim. Yeah, but Yamim, we learn from Yamim. And that's the year by Batayari Chaima. We're not going to learn out Yamim from Chodesh Yamim. So Danin Yamim Stam, Yamim Stam, Veinanim Yamim Stam, Yamim Shemar Bam Chodesh. And therefore, we understand Lavan's statement as let her stay a year or 10 months. Omer Abizera, hold on a second over here. When we're talking about a ketana, this is all talking about that she's a nara, okay? If she's a ketana, so ben hi u ben avia yecholim la'akev, she or her father can say, listen, I'm too young for this. It's too much for me. I can't start handling a family and taking care of all of this cooking and have all this sex stuff. I'm too little for this kind of stuff. Really, forget about it, man. Wait until I grow up, okay? She can do that. She can say that. As a matter of fact, the father can say that. So even though they had originally planned a wedding, she can say, no, I really can't take it. Now, wait a minute. I understand why she can say it. I mean, that's perfectly reasonable that it's just too much for me. But why should her father? What's it her father's business? I mean, if she's ready, she says, no, I'm anxious to get married. I hate this house anyway. Let me get my own house, you know? So if she says, I'm okay with it, how can her father object to something that is already in motion where he accepted? And by the way, he's not even allowed to really accept an erison for her while she's a ketana, even though he has the power to. We're going to see later that it's usser really at that age because we want to wait until she grows up and she has enough of her own awareness to say, I like this guy, I want to marry this guy. Not that you should select the husband for her. Okay, but here we're talking about where he did. He wasn't supposed to, but he did. So I understand why she can say no, but what business is it of the father's? My nafka leimina. I mean, he had an agreement with this guy, you know, I'm going to give you my daughter. Now, all of a sudden, arbitrarily, he decides, you know, it's really too much for her. She's too young. The guy says, what are you talking about? She tells me she can't wait to get married to me and so on. What's this business, too young? So indeed, asks the Gemara, what business is it of the father's? Because he still has a right to say, look, we all know that there's a vast conspiracy to try to persuade people to get married, right? In other words, why is it that parents don't warn their children off of marriage? Because they all want grandchildren, right? Whatever. So nobody tells anybody until it's too late. So therefore, in this case, the father says, yeah, but the fact that she doesn't know what she's doing, hashta lo yada, she has no idea what she's getting herself into. So it's all very nice that she thinks it's going to be like playing house the way she did here in the house, you know, where she's got her little baby carriages and all of this, and she thinks it's all going to be fun. It's not going to be fun. And she's going to find that out very quickly. So what's she going to do? She's going to come running home to Daddy. And then what's Daddy going to do? Oh, God. I'll have to take care of her, and then we'll have to plan another marriage when she gets older. I'll have to buy her new dresses, because meanwhile, she's shot up. Now she's 3 inches taller. I can't go through this again. And I'm like, forget it. Let's just wait, you know? So Savar, he thinks, Hashta Shalor Yada, she doesn't know what she's getting herself into. Lamachar Mimradov and Afka, she's going to be Moredet and get out of there with, from her husband, come back home to Daddy, and she's going to come here. Va'ati v'nafla iluya, and then she's going to be on my head. What do I need this for? Just wait till she grows up, okay? And then there's a chance she'll actually stay with you, but I certainly don't want to deal with it again. So Amar Rabbi Bar Levi, the truth is you do not even set a date for marriage of a ketana. So in poskin ala ketana la siyakish ketana, because of this issue, because both of them can be ma'akiv, and because we assume that it's very reasonable that she doesn't really know what she's getting into and that it's not fair. So don't make a wedding date. But you can make a wedding date while she's a ketana if that wedding date is at a time when she will already be a gdola. That you can do. So poskim ala ketana la siyakish gdola. Well, why not? I don't understand. Well, obviously. I mean, what would be wrong with that? No. Because I would have thought that that itself is a psychological violation. And remember, all of this Masechet is dealing with, especially now, the psychology of it, in terms of Rabbi Meir's sheet about the Ksuva. It is psychologically difficult for her. You know, so we're telling her, okay, sweetie pie, in another year you're going to be married. I don't want to think about that. Another year, I enjoy playing with my dollies. I don't want the real thing. No, but by then you'll be old enough. Well, what do I know about by then? You're driving me crazy with this stuff. It's making me sick. I want to have my childhood. You're ruining my childhood by making plans for me that I'm going to be growing up in a year. I don't want to be growing up in a year. You might think that indeed Peter Pan syndromes are very meaningful in childhood and you don't have a right to violate them. And that itself would cause damage. Lechash dilma ma'ya pachta mi'ashas. She can get very tense right now about the whole thing, which is going to affect her mind, v'chal shah, and therefore it should be usur to do this. Kamash malon, that you're allowed to do. Obviously, I mean, if it really is causing distress and so on, then you find you make allowances for that, but it means that mi'ikaradin, this is not something you have to worry about. Anyway, Omer Avunah, and I want to tell you something else. We've been talking about over here, the din about the ketana, and the din about setting a date when she's a bogeres, while she's a nara, and so on. But once she's already bagra, if she was a bogeret, even for a day, and then she becomes an arusa, so then she only gets 30 days of preparation like an alman. I'll tell you why. Because basically, once she was a nara, she already started worrying about, am I going to get left behind? All of my classmates are getting married, and as soon I'm going to be 12 and a half already. Everybody else is already going to be married. I'm going to be, and who knows? I mean, I may end up being 13, and then no one will ever look at me. You know, it's exactly the same thing today, you know. So I'm 18. If I'm going to be 19 in Lakewood, that's it. I'm finished. That's the end of my life. I'm an old maid. So fine. So in those days, it was 12, 13. But the idea is the same. It's all a socially mandated kind of thing. So because of this, during the period of Narut, where she's already aware of her desire to have a family and so on and so forth, so she's mature enough to start planning. So she figures, you know, if I don't start working on this now, you know, when I'm old enough and I get a proposal and I say to the guy, great, I'd love to marry you. I need 12 months. He says, I got plenty of girls out there that don't even want 12 days. I'm not going to sit around here waiting 12 months for you. So I better start preparing myself now. So therefore, if she's already a bogeret, then we can assume she's been going nuts to get things ready because she's worried about losing a proposal. Masha Enkain, if she was already engaged from before, so now she's 12. She's not 12 and a half yet. So she says to herself, ah, the future is sewed up. Daddy already found somebody nice for me. This is great. Okay, well, why don't you start getting ready? No, what do I need to get ready for? I got everything settled. When the guy tells me it's time for marriage, then I'll start working on it. Meanwhile, I can keep playing, right? So that's when we give her 12 months. But if it's already post her Na'arut and now she's become a Bogeret, she's been using the time already. And then she's only given the amount of time that Almana would get. That's what Ravuna says. As the Gemara, the Braita says that Bagra Harehi Kitvu'ah, that once she becomes a Bogeret, she is the equivalent of having been given a notice that we want to get married and start preparing the wedding. Now, I'm assuming that means 12 months, like we said in the Mishnah. A Betula gets 12 months. So what we're saying is, as soon as she was a Bogeret, that is the equivalent of her being told, prepare for the wedding of 12 months. That's all that it's saying. But, I mean, according to Ravuna, she only gets 30 days. Well, no, it says Ravuna, I mean, maybe it means kitfu'a, like an almana, meaning she can't say, I didn't know you wanted to get married, you didn't tell me, you know. So you could say that once she was a Bogeret, it's understood that the Erisin is the equivalent of, okay, listen, I want to get married, and therefore she'd have to prepare. But she only gets 30 days, says Ravuna. I still maintain she only gets 30 days. Toshma, let's take a look at actually a Mishnah. In this case, it's talking about Faras Nedarim and so on, but still the idea is the same. It says in that Mishnah, the Bogeret Sheshata Shlemeser Chodesh. She's a Bogeret, and she has already waited 12 months, which sounds like she was a Bogeret and then got her 12 months after she was Bagra, right? Which already is not like Ravuna. So it says she was a Bogeret who waited 12 months. So Rebbe Eliezer says, well, look, is it not the case that we're going to be Machayev, her husband, to support her? Yes, we said if he doesn't perform within 12 months, so now he's got to start taking care of her, and we had the whole thing with the truma, whatever. So once she's dependent on him, he can already be made for her nedarim, because since he's taking care of her, this is post-Erison vis-a-vis the neder, and you don't need both the father and him to be made for the neder. This is Beit Bala, because he's already in the Beit Bala nadara, Beit Isha nadara, that's Beit Bala, and that's what this would be. And he can do the hafara all by himself. This is Rebbe Eliezer Shita, okay? Anyway, but the bottom line is, it says 12 months for a Bogeret. Ravuna said there's only 30 days for a Bogeret. So I don't understand. Is Ravuna going against the Farsha Mishnah? No, Ravuna says, you're reading the Mishnah wrong. It doesn't mean a Bogeret sheshahata. It's a Bogeret visheshahata shlemasra chodesh. It's two different cases. A Bogeret, which is only 30 days, like an Almana, as Ravuna said, or a Nara, who was given the 12 months. Fine, those are two different cases. So there, Rebbe Eliezer, I'm a Balakai, I don't see, says Ravuna, that the Mishnah is problematic for me. Okay, take a look at the Braita. You'll see that it is a problem. Hama'areset ha-betula. So somebody gives Kedushin to a betula, bein shetiva'ah ba'al v'hi ma'akevet, bein shetiva'ah hi u'ba'al ma'akevet. I don't give a hang who the problem is, the runaway bride or the runaway groom. But the point is that you get 12 months for the performance from the time of notification. I want to get married. Get yourself ready. Whether it's from her point of view or his point of view. And once she becomes a Bogeret, then she is basically on notice. Be ready to get married. So she's only got 12 months from there. Kate Saad, so here, well, let's explain what we mean. If she was even Bogra Yom Echad, and he was Mekadosher on that very day that she's a Bogeret, from the moment of the Kedushin, she's got 12 months. 12 months? What 12 months? I thought according to Ravuna, if she was already Bogra, she only gets 1 month. V'arusa, which we're going to ask what that means, I thought we're talking about Arusa. Now, Arusa can have sometimes only 30 days, which we'll discuss in a moment. But meanwhile, this is a Tiyuf to Ravuna, right? I mean, it says Beferish, 12 months after an Arison post-Bogra's man. Yes, says Ravuna, okay, I surrender. All right, that's the end of Ravuna's approach. Now, just can you explain to me what was that funny ending? Ula Arusa Shloshim Yom. We're talking about an Arusa. What does that mean? Omer of Papa. It means like this, that a Bogeret of Ru'aleh Hashneimah Tzarchodesh Bibagrut, and then she was Niskatsha, Then she's given shloshim yom ke'almana. So what happened over here, she became an arusa after waiting around. Oh, my God, I'm going to be an old maid at any moment. I'm already 12 and a half, and she's got 12 months, you know, that she's waiting. And only then she gets her eris in. So then we give her 30 days from that point. That's a different situation where she's very nervous and she's getting herself ready. Okay, now, it says of Yirigiyazman Velonisu that then, according to the Mishnah, she gets to eat truma. That's the Mishnah Rishayna. Omar Ula, why is that? Because the truth is that Midiraisa, she was allowed to eat truma immediately, you see. So Dvar Torah, Arusa Bat Yisrael, Ochelet Betruma, Shenemar of Kohen Ki Kenet Nefesh Kinyan Kaspo. This is a Kinyan Kaspo. And I'm a Kinyan Kaspo. So where do we get the idea that she should not be eating truma? My tam lo amru lo ina ochelet, because of the old cook in the refrigerator problem. Since she's still living at home, because she's only an arusa, if we allow her to eat truma at this point, basically her siblings are going to end up drinking her truma. So she's got a bottle of grape flavored coke. And this is, of course, truma. And, oh, my God, the other kids are going to be drinking it, and they're going to be zorim, and it's an iser misa, be the shema, terrible. So we made a gezera. We don't want her to have truma in the house. Okay. And all we need is shema yimziku lakos bebeit aviyav tashke lachiyav lachotah. I don't get it. So then if the time arrives, and it's 12 months, and he didn't perform, so what, now all of a sudden we don't care? Now all of a sudden let everybody eat truma and be over on an Isra D'Oraisa with a Chi of Misa? What's the explanation? So then it should be the same thing, even if he gives man velo nisa. No. What do you think, this guy's crazy? If he has to take care of her, if he pours food into the house where she's living, it's not going to go very far, and she's going to go to court. She's going to say, I don't have enough to eat. Well, the reason she doesn't have enough to eat is because she's sharing everything with her siblings. You know, what are you going to do? You're going to bring in a box of bisli, truma bisli into the house. This is a disaster. I mean, how much can I? So what do? I basically make a deal with the Kohen Cafe. All of her meals, she eats in the Kohen Cafe, which is all truma. But, I mean, they don't allow the siblings in there. She's got to pass as a Kohenet, right? And that way, it's not going to happen. I'm not stupid to send Truma to a house where all the other kids are going to tear away all of her food. So, hatam duchta miyachid, he's going to give her a special place where she's going to be able to eat, and that there's not going to be any Truma shared because he doesn't want it shared financially. So he's going to take good care to make sure it isn't shared. So, hold on a second. I don't like this. Because let's say a guy has a hired picker. Remember, we had the case of the picker who lives in the house and the whole thing. So why aren't we worried that if a Kohen who's eating truma and he's a picker who lives in the rooms that are provided for him by the farmer who's not a Kohen, he's just the Yisrael, so then we shouldn't allow a Kohen who's working as a picker to eat truma, because it's going to be, I mean, what if somebody takes some of his food out of the fridge and then there's going to be truma in the house? I mean, this has nothing to do with a woman. It's just what you're telling me is it's irrelevant to the whole idea of marriage. It just is we don't want truma in a Yisrael's refrigerator. That's all that you're telling me. So then why don't we find it elsewhere? Ah, come on. Because there's a difference between the guys living they're the ones who are providing food. I mean, they're going to go take his food. Get out of here. Hashtamididu safu lady. It's inappropriate to the whole relationship. They should take his food. Come off it. You know, somebody comes in and works for you, has a little lunch bag. You're going to open their lunch bag and eat their lunch. Masha Enkin, if you're talking about siblings, that's something else. Over there, it's always siblings always steal from your lunchbox. So that's where we make the gezerah. Now, this was our first approach over here. Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yehuda says, that's not the reason. The reason is because of Simpon. Gabi, you're going to have to remember to write this down, Simpon, on your list of concepts. What is a Simpon? It's a fascinating word, which I believe comes actually from the same word as siphon. Simpon, because remember the symphonote are the bronchial tubes, and therefore in the rea. And therefore, the idea of a siphon and a symphon has to do with air pressure. And the idea of the air pressure is obviously as your diaphragm expands, now the symphonot are bringing air in, and as you compress the diaphragm, they're taking air out. A siphon essentially works on the principle of different air pressure, which allows you to siphon out gas from somebody else's gas tank, let's say. Or the Gemara talks about siphons in terms of the dinim of Negia B'Yayin and Yayin Nes. They use siphons all the time. You get something moving, it creates a vacuum, and then the air pressure, the difference in the air pressure will push the liquid out of the tank into the area which is slightly lower, right? So a symphon basically means hitnagdut, something that will run pressured in the other direction. That's how we use the term. We use it as a simpon. It could mean something that will run counter to your desire in the marriage and cancel the marriage. We use simpon, which would mean a mum of some kind. You discover something that is a annulment of the marriage because nobody would want a woman that's like that, whatever. Or a simpon could be in a contract. I find something that runs counter to the validity of the contract. But the general sense is that it is counteracting. That's the point. That's why I think it relates to symphonos, where that's the whole idea of air pressure, is counteracting by creating vacuums. And therefore, the real problem is a symphon. Because what will happen is that until such time as he takes her to the chuppah, the thing is still up in the air, because he may ultimately come to discover, oh, heck, this isn't the girl that I want. I never saw her undressed. You know, now I see her undressed. I don't want her. So if that's the case, if we're going to annul the marriage and we've been allowing her to drink and eat truma the whole time, so then it would be terrible. So she's going to be eating truma, but iser gomor. So in order to avoid that, so we aser it. But I don't understand. So then what would be the svara in the Mishnah to say that once the 12 months are up, I mean, he still hasn't performed, he hasn't taken her to the chuppah, why aren't we still worried about the simpon? Because hata mivdak bodik la v'hadar ma'ayil, the point is that once he's ready for the chuppah, then the chosen has definitely found out. He can ask friends. He can ask relatives. He can ask his sisters or his cousins. Listen, I'm engaged to this girl. You know, I don't really know what's going on. I mean, come on. You've been in the locker room with her, you know, and yeah, you went swimming and everything together. What's really going on? Tell me the truth. I don't want to waste money on a wedding and then find out. So fine. So he'll find out what's going on. So first he's baidik and then he takes her to the chuppah. So, but there's a different problem over here, because Elamiata, if you're really concerned about a simpon, then when you buy an Eved, okay, he shouldn't be allowed to eat truma, because Eved Kohen Shalakachomi Yisrael, until now this Eved was owned by a non-Kohen. You're a Kohen, you buy this Eved, and you're going to start feeding him truma from day one, right? Now you don't know what may turn up as a simpon in the Eved, so we should not allow you to eat truma. There's no such thing as a simpon with that. What are we talking about? Are we talking about something disgusting externally that he looks ugly or whatever? So you saw that, right? If it's something that is under his clothes, I mean, what do you care? You want him to do a job, but he's going to be able to do the job or not do the job. I don't care what kind of moles he has on his body or whatever. And shibasetulichpatle. Now, if you find out that he's a ganav, all right, so now you say, oh, now wait a minute, you know, I bought this Eved and he ends up stealing everything from the house and he's selling it down the street. And I says, I would never have bought this. Or he's a kuvyustus. A kuvyustus, Rashi learns all over that a kuvyustus is a gonev nefashot. He's basically a kidnapper, you know. Where Tosfos shows that that is ridiculous. Because, I mean, we find that the taina on Moshe Rabbeinu was, you know, Moshe Rabchem, or the Greeks, it doesn't work out, the Cheshbon doesn't work out, because the 1776 missing Shkolim, what happened to that? Was Moshe Rabchem was a Kuvyustus? So Tosfos says, what does Kuvyustus have to do with stealing money, or not knowing how to give a good accounting for funds? So Tosfos learns a Kuvyustus, if you think about the word, it's very clear. He's a cube kind of guy, meaning he plays dice. So the guy's a compulsive gambler. You don't want an Evan as a compulsive gambler, because let me tell you something. Where do you think he's going to get the money to gamble with and to pay off his debts when the mafia comes after him? You don't want that in your house. So what are you going to say? They're just talking about that he's a ganav or a kuvyustus. I never would have bought an Evan who's a kuvyustus. No, because anyway, he gio. What are you talking about? Every Eved is like that. You can't claim Well, if I thought he was a really great guy. You never thought an Eved was a really great guy. You know perfectly well that he's a ganav, and that what you bring an Arab into your house, and you say, I don't believe he's going to steal. All right, so you might as well hand him your wallet. So, I mean, there's no such thing. You can't come back with a taina to annul a sale on something that everybody knows. So, Ma'ika, what are you going to say? Maybe he's a really serious guy. I mean, he goes around holding people up at gunpoint. I mean, I wasn't ready to bring in somebody violent like that. Maybe he's a murderer. Maybe he's Mukhtav Lamalchut. I mean, maybe you find out that this guy's got a death warrant out against him because, he's already been, he's an escapee from prison or whatever. So if that would be the case, that he's a listed Mizuyim or Mukhtav Lamalchut, we do not believe you that it was a mistake because the word gets out. And if you bought him, you probably got a good deal and you were willing to take the risk. And now they found out about it. Now you're claiming it was all a mistake. It was no mistake. Because Hanakola Itlahu, these people, basically, you would have known about. Now, what is the difference between Ula and Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda? Bottom line is, a girl can't eat truma. Either she can't eat truma because of the Coke in the fridge, or she can't eat truma because of the possibility that there will be an annulment due to a simpon, right? The difference would be three cases. Either kibel, meaning that the guy has accepted on himself, listen, I'm telling you right now, I don't care what shows up. I love this girl, whatever it is, I'm in. And I cannot make any taina afterwards that it was a mistake and annul the wedding. So in that case, we're not concerned for simpon, but we're still concerned for Coke bottles or masar or halach. Masar would mean that the father, remember, he gave her over or her, meaning he was walking along. And remember, when daddy walks along, then he's got his dirty fingers still in the pie and she's not considered to be really in the house of her husband yet, or where maybe the shluchim went along, and we said over there, so if he would have sent her, she would have been in a suah. But if the father or his shluchim go along, she's not in a suah. So then there's a big difference about whether she can eat truma. Because if the issue was about the Coke bottle, once she's on the way, even if technically she's not in the suah, there's no more Coke bottle. Masha Enken, if she's not already considered to be in the Suan, the worry is about a simpon, there still could be a simpon.